Today on Rich in Relationship, how to clear the hurdles of asset division with Jenny Bradley.
We're talking about asset division when you're doing it. Feels like it. Why are you trying to take mine?
But I think not acting in fear is a great thing, but a heck of a lot easier said than done. Because it's unknown territory. It's unfamiliar territory, and you just want to be safe and you're worried about your future.
We're talking about the emotional value versus the physical value.
Whenever you fight over something in divorce, it costs time, it costs money, and it costs emotional bandwidth.
When people come in emotionally charged, the way you've just described it, it's always slower, more painful, and more expensive on every level. Welcome to Rich in Relationship. Today, we're working with Jenny Bradley from Triangle Smart Divorce. How are you doing today, Jenny?
Doing well, Rich. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure. And Jenny and I have known each other for a while and we've broken bread and it's more than a working relationship. So forgive us if we get familiar from time to time. Jenny, the audience, they don't know you like I do. I'm sure they want to know, how did your heart lead you into this work?
Yeah, I think that's one of those things like Steve Jobs said that I connected the dots backwards. If you want to know the truth. It just felt pulled in that direction, but I didn't really know why. And it wasn't until I did work on myself and a lot of personal development, a lot of mindfulness. I was like, oh, I know why I'm doing this. Because my parents stayed married for the sake of the child. And it wasn't necessarily a happy marriage at times. And there were a lot of things I overheard that I probably shouldn't have heard. And I just decided that there was a better way. And I wanted to let people know that getting a divorce doesn't mean destroying your family. Like, you can still maintain that and you can still have a wonderful life ahead of you, and that there are options other than staying in a, let's just say, unrewarding marriage, at times toxic.
I love that. I love that. And it's a great counterpoint to my story, which is the parents who didn't stay together, but did it really badly, the divorce really badly. It's perfect. And I'll share this and then we'll get rocking. Folks, in case you don't know, the studies show that child well-being, parents who are married and are of this relatively same mind, those kids have the highest level of well-being. But the next one is parents who are divorced and have pretty much the same vision for their kids. Those kids have super high well-being. And the worst level of well-being, or potentially, are parents who stay together and have completely different ideas about almost everything. And that's what makes this conversation so important. All right. First question. Are you ready?
Ready.
Here comes the pitch.
All right.
We're talking about asset division. Really what we're talking about is dividing up the resources so that the children are best supported in it. And I know from personal experience, it doesn't feel like that though when you're doing it. When it feels like it, it's like, why are you trying to take mine? It's definitely one of the things that's going on. So my first question to you is, how might the fear of financial insecurity post-divorce lead to people being like defensive or aggressive when they're talking about asset division in the divorce process?
Yeah, Rich, that's a great question. We see it come up a lot, particularly early on in the process, maybe when one spouse decided 6 months ago, 9 months ago, that 3 years ago, this marriage was over and they were ready to leave, but they didn't leave. And divorce is like a grieving process. So if it's sprung on one spouse, like, this marriage is over, I'm leaving. They're like, what? Wait, I didn't know where that was coming from. Your subconscious immediately goes into protection mode, right?
Uh-huh.
And when your subconscious is in protection mode, all kinds of things are going to come in. All those fear emotions are coming in. All those, talked a little bit earlier before we got started about the amygdala hijack. It's just flooding your frontal cortex. You can't think clearly. You can't think rationally. And that sometimes will lead you to do some behavior that you otherwise might not do if you weren't so afraid or scared. So, for instance, we've had clients do some really dumb things. I'm just going to be honest. They've went and took 100% of all the money out of the retirement because for some reason they thought the spouse was going to be able to get to it. And that caused huge tax consequences and huge penalties for people. And you don't know what you don't know. And so I think not acting in fear is a great thing, but a heck of a lot easier said than done. Because it's unknown territory, it's unfamiliar territory, and you just want to be safe and you're worried about your future.
Yeah. So it sounds like what you're talking about here is part of the divorce process can feel very threatening. And when we feel very threatened, instead of having our emotions, basically our emotions take us. And sometimes it takes us to places that maybe don't really benefit even us, though it might seem like it in the moment.
Oh, absolutely, Rich. That's a great summary.
So question number two, and folks, I want to fix that problem right now so badly. But right now we're going to explore what are the potential pitfalls. This is all about pitfalls. So question number two, in what ways can deep emotional attachments to certain assets, like the family home, or like my wife likes to talk about, there was this piece of Stickley furniture that her husband really loved and that she purchased. How can that kind of deep emotional attachment to a certain piece of furniture or a home or whatever complicate the process and you keep it from being fair and objective, really, in terms of the actual value? Then we're talking about the emotional value versus the actual value.
Right. And the easiest way to think about it is whenever you fight over something in divorce, it costs time, it costs money, and it costs emotional bandwidth. Whether you're fighting for it because it's fair, which is a word I try not to use on divorce because nothing feels fair, to be honest. And it's an eye of the beholder, just like beauty, right? What feels fair to me might not feel fair to you, Rich. But things that can be pitfalls are exactly what you said. There is stereotypically, and you may have research that supports this, I just haven't experienced it. Women prefer to maintain the marital home for the stability children and the school district and the friends in the neighborhood and the convenience and not to have the headache of moving and having to sort through things and such. And sometimes that may or may not be the wisest, most savvy financial decision, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But to your question about it being a pitfall, you could keep going round and round circles about how much you want to keep the marital home. But if there's not a way for you to afford the marital home, we've got to talk about some other options. And I really do hate talking in stereotypes, but they just show up sometimes. Women will fight a lot for the children's things, right? The children's toys, the children's clothing, again, all to keep the child safe and keep them in the familiar and such. And I tell people a lot, we can replace this Lego set. We can replace the Barbie doll mats. These things. Doesn't make sense to continue to argue about stuff and things. And it's really easy for me to say stuff and things, because from my objective world, it's stuff and things. To them, it has a whole different sentimental value, a different emotional value. And men do it as well with other things. I had a gentleman very tied to some things he inherited from his grandfather. Rightfully, right? This was the only thing tangible he had left that he could hold on to from his grandfather that meant so much to him. And he was willing to be deep in debt to just fight about this one thing that we couldn't even find anymore. Because I don't know if she destroyed it. I don't know if it got lost in a move. I don't know where it went, but we couldn't find it anymore. He just wanted to keep paying money to get this thing back. And it's not really replaceable. It's a tough situation to be in. But that guided him to be, quite honestly, a little spiteful and vengeful because he was absolutely convinced that his wife had destroyed it. And that cost him a lot more money. It made his divorce a lot more contentious than it should have been.
Yeah. And in the end, who really pays for that? It's no disrespect to you as an attorney, but it's a matter of whose kids am I funding? Whose future am I funding? Whose kids' future am I funding? Mine or yours? And so if I choose to get all wrapped up in a fight today about something that I might find less meaningful in the future, I'm going to be funding my attorney's kids' college fund, not my kids' college fund. And that's really my choice. And I think I say that because I work with a lot of people who are like, oh, those attorneys, they're just out for the money. But it's no, not so much. There may be some attorneys who are, but I actually find in this field, they're mostly people like yourself who have had an experience and they want to make it easier and better. And easier and better means faster and less expensive. But when people come in emotionally charged, the way you've just described it, it's always slower, more painful, and more expensive on every level.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Question number three.
Listen, I don't take offense either, Rich.
Thank you.
I don't the fence, because I say exactly what you say to our clients. You can pay me to have this bank for you. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I know who's going to end up with the money. My law firm, not your family.
I guess that's why it's triangle smart divorce.
That's right. It's keep you from making stupid mistakes. Like,
yeah, I love it. I love it. All right. Question number three. What are the potential consequences of not fully understanding the value of the things that you have, the shared assets and or the legal, this sounds almost like Chinese to me, so you're going to have to explain it to me, the legal implications of asset division. Actually, if I'm honest, I know what it means because I'm married to a lawyer, but I'm wondering how it sounds to the audience.
Yeah, it probably makes their eyes glaze over and they want to shut
this
off.
It's like, oh, the value of shared assets, legal implications, asset division. That sounds like our language. Actually, first, if you would translate that into English, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I will translate that into plain English. I understand your question to be, what kind of problems might you run into if you don't know what all your stuff is worth and you don't understand how it can and can't get divvied up or divided or split or whatever the verb you want to use there? Right. And so
yeah.
You know, I'm from Tennessee originally, but I've lived in North Carolina since I was 18. So I think I'm just going to say the Southern phrase, you could lose the whole farm if you don't understand what the farm is worth.
Mm.
And an example of that is you might think it's just a piece of dirt. Right.
Yeah.
But maybe it's got potential for development. Maybe it's got mineral rights. Maybe it's got oil rights. Maybe it has potential to be a working farm again. And if you don't know what something is worth, it really can be taken advantage of. And I said, I don't like to use the word fair. I had a mentor who said it only comes to town once a year and there's no cotton candy in divorce. And so that's why we don't use the word fair down here in the South. But nonetheless, you really can be taken advantage of and really end up with a very unequal slice of the marital pie. And in my state and in your state, you're up in New York. That's what we try to do is we're trying to figure out what's in that marital state. We try to divide it up in half because that's presumed to be fair. So not knowing what things are worth, you might think an asset is worth nothing and it's really very valuable. And you missed out on an opportunity to have a portion of that or some other part of the estate to offset that. And that sacrificed some of your financial future, maybe your financial freedom as you move forward. The other part of your question was these legal aspects and implications and all those fancy words that you use. And really just what that means is, like, what does it mean? Like, if I take this house, but he takes that house, maybe one of them is an investment property and has some taxes associated with it. And if you don't know that, you're going to be on the hook for some stuff.
Mm.
You don't know that this executive compensation plan can't be divided until somebody is fired or retires. You might be waiting 20 years for your money where we could have gotten cash in hand up front.
Mm-hmm.
So knowledge is power. And being knowledgeable about these things is great, but also daunting and overwhelming, particularly if you're still in a very emotional state and fearful and scared and untrusting of anyone, right? I'm sure you have some tips. We're going to talk about how to get some clarity and see through that fog of all the overwhelm.
Yeah, I sure hope so. Yeah, I love that. It's what I heard. I think I heard you say anyway, was, yeah, there's the value. There's the cash value of things today. And then there's what they might be worth in 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And or there might also be, it's interesting because I also think about this in terms of who we are and our sense of purpose and fulfillment. And I'm thinking maybe if who you are as a farmer, let's go back to the farm metaphor. It might be that the value of the property isn't that high, but the value for you of working a farm is super high. And that might help, but you got to understand what you're trading for what before you do it. Otherwise, I'm a farmer. I got to have a farm. And you don't really know what you're trading off to get that. You're going to 5 years down the lane, you might go, man, that divorce did not go the way it should have. Look at me now.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Rich. And I think something that goes hand in hand with that is that we talk about value a lot. And we lawyers and financial analysts and accountants of everyone mean dollars when we say that. But you just raised a great point, which is value isn't always what is worth monetarily. And lawyers slip into that a lot, right? We'll give people advice and we'll say, we've got to split this marital pie at 50-50. I just did it a minute ago. That's presumed fair, splitting it 50-50 based upon monetarily what it's worth. But maybe that's not as important to you. Maybe you think you'd have a fair resolution if you got to keep that farm, right? And the other person got everything else and you'd be okay with that. You got to keep all the horses and everyone would be okay with that. You might take less monetarily if you got to keep the things that were really important to you that you valued intrinsically.
Yeah. Just a side note, we have that piece of stickly furniture I was talking about. That is one of the most expensive pieces of furniture she ever bought. And he doesn't miss it, really. So the value of it at the time was he's not going to get it. And today it's, what did she do that? Actually, I was involved. We were seeing each other. Wow. What was it? Why did we do that? But yeah, this is a really important question. Now, later. What's the value now? What's the value later? And we're going to talk about this thing you brought up about the underlying fears is really important, right? So let's start talking about solutions. How excited are you?
Oh, I'm so rich. I'm a lawyer. I love fixing stuff.
Yeah, I know that you do. All right. So we're talking about how you've helped people navigate these kinds of problems. What's a legal backdrop for this stuff? And my first question for you is, can you share examples of how you've helped clients navigate the emotional complexities of asset division, especially when there's some of those situations we talked about yesterday, when somebody's maybe they're really attached to the home, or maybe they're like me and my wife, there's that piece of stickly furniture we got to get just to stick it to the other person. You know what? So it's so weird that it was a piece of stickly furniture. Examples. What do you got going on?
Yeah, man, we could go on all day about this. I could probably do a stand-up show. And not to take light of people's emotional situations, but when you get on the other side of it, you said it before about the piece of furniture. You look back and you shake your head and you're like, what were you thinking? And so what we do at Tyrannal Smart Divorce is we try to get people thinking before they get to that retrospect when they're coming back and they're looking at the rearview mirror, like, what was I doing? What was I thinking? I'm going to give you some examples, Rich. I got to do that lawyer thing where I say, don't take any of this as legal advice. I don't know you. You don't know me. Whoever's listening to this, I don't know your situation. I might not even be in your state. That's a bunch of lawyer talk to say, I can't give you legal advice. I'm just giving you some, let's just call them examples that you could use as a guide. So your question got lost in my disclaimer, but if I remember right, it's like, what have we done to help people navigate past this emotional state?
Yeah, especially because you're the legal expert, but you're encountering this all the time. I'm sure you're really good at it.
Yeah, I think it helps that this is something I've been doing for 20 plus years with experience. Nice. If I was doing this, I was nowhere near the level I am now when I first started practicing in the 90s. One of the things is giving them some space, quite honestly. This may be new, and they need to go through the emotional experience and the fear. There's not much worse you can do, I think, to somebody when they're scared to say, you shouldn't be afraid. What does that do? What does that solve? So getting someone lined up with a great therapist, I think, is very important to help them navigate these things. I tell folks all the time, I am overpaid as your therapist, and I'm not qualified to be. I have a bag of tricks that I can use, and most of those involve asking you questions that are open-ended so that you get into your thinking brain rather than your reactionary brain. And so getting away from yes and no questions, but asking, like, why is staying in the house important to you? What would it look like if you didn't stay in the house? Starting to visualize different futures and different options and different paths and having to paint those pictures, because when your brain, you can explain the science, Rich, perhaps, but when your brain starts seeing images and starts painting pictures of the future, you can't stay in reactionary fight, flight, or freeze mode. Uh-huh. You have to stay into creative mode. And so that's probably one of the biggest things I've done. What are you seeing? Because I know you work with folks.
I love that you lean into other resources and you recommend that your clients lean into other resources, because it's as if somebody came to me because they're divorcing someone they feel is toxic on the other side and asked me to do legal work for them. I could pretend that I know enough to give legal advice, but I don't. And it's just not going to work. You can't come to someone who helps people with divorce on the emotional side and expect them to know the legal side. And on the legal side, you may have a lot of training and skill that'll help them along emotionally, but there are times when they need someone else. Typically, I love that what you said about, hey, if you're looking at the future, it's very hard to stay in fear. And the big challenge for a lot of the people that we work with there is it's also really hard to see the future if you're really locked down in fear. So it's about helping them let that go, acknowledge and let that go, and giving them techniques for when that fear comes up, how to acknowledge it and handle it in such a way that they're not stuffing it and still getting through it so they can get to that future. And I think as a follow-up to that question, so you've worked with them, you help them to see that maybe that piece of stickly furniture just isn't worth fighting for because after all, there's just too much emotional value and not enough financial value. And in 5 years or 10 years, it's just not going to be like us. It's just going to be sitting there. You're going to be going, why do I have that? The really important thing is helping them see what's that financial future that you're working towards. What is going to happen to my kids when they get out of high school? Am I going to be able to help them with whatever their next steps are, whether it's a trade school, college, or launching their own business? Am I going to be in a position to support them in that? How do you assist clients in developing that vision and getting there, especially where there's a lot of fear about, there just doesn't seem to be enough now?
Yeah, and it's not always easy, right? Like you said, that emotion can't be stuffed away or it's just going to keep coming up. If you don't address it and you don't deal with it and you don't try to resolve some of the fear, then it's not, you're going to stay locked in the fear. And every time something gets scary, you're going to go back to fear again, instead of looking at it from a more reasoned approach. And so on our side, coupled with what folks like you do, who are helping with the emotional piece of going through divorce, is we start asking point blank questions. What are you imagining your worst case scenario is? Ask how many different things would actually have to happen for that worst case scenario to happen? What is the likelihood that those many different things could happen? I have a friend who's very afraid of flying, and this was a technique the therapist used with her. So I'm just going to steal it. And I thought, this is great for divorce. And he said, what's the worst thing you're thinking of? And she said that the plane will crash and I'll die and I'll never see my children again. I said, okay. How many things have to happen wrong for a plane to crash? And this guy had some knowledge of aviation and he was going through all the checklists that the pilots have and everything else. And he was saying, the 20 things have to happen for a plane to crash. We see it in the news. And because of the psychological thing called the availability heuristic, we think it happens all the time. But it does. It happens statistically very small compared to a car crash. And not many things have to go wrong for your car to crash. A lot of things have to go wrong for a plane to crash. And so that's what we start doing with our clients today. Okay, that's now your worst case scenario. What would have to happen for that to happen? And how would you feel if that happened? I'd feel scared. I'd feel bankrupt. I'd be distraught. I would be living in a van by the river with my kids. All those things. Okay, we can work on all of that too, because unless your spouse absconds to some foreign country that we can't find them, we can get you support. We can divide up the house. We can divide up the assets. We can do these types of things. If you came to us and you were terribly financially distraught to begin with, that's a harder problem to fix. But we have tools in our box for all of these things. And so being cognizant of the fact that this fear is going to pop up sometimes every time we make a new decision point in a legal case is really important training that we do with our lawyers here. To stop and not just push through it, but to actually help the clients process it. And if they're stuck, getting them to a good therapist. But the other thing is to, in addition to painting the future, like we talked about before, helping them. If they can't see the future that far out, help them see the now right now. That was a funny way to say that. Help them see the now in the moment for what's going on and what are steps we can take right now to help secure that future, even if we don't know exactly what we want that future to be.
I love the way you're coupling what's the future you want with intellectually having them intellectually break down the fear. Because the fact of the matter is that fear is being driven by a part of our brain that has no rationale. It's totally emotional. But by having them think through how would that happen, you're literally driving them to another part of their brain that isn't fear driven, that can break it down in pieces. And so they literally, you are helping them to literally move out of the fear. And that's really cool. And the other part that's really cool about that is once they're in that space, then they can really see that future. And something I love to tell people in this process that goes really well with what you're doing is that I have them think about the first time that they went to buy a house, or if they didn't buy a house, maybe they're renting, or the first time they bought a car, they went out to buy a car. Typically, the way it goes is we always end up getting something that's a little more than we thought we could afford, right? And somehow we find a way to up our game to get that thing that we really wanted that was a little more than we thought we could afford. And in divorce, we don't feel like we can afford anything, right? Because the money is pouring out all over the place, right? You've got coaches and therapists and lawyers and financial planners. And sometimes you've got forensic psychologists and all, it, depending on how messy, the money's just going everywhere. It can feel really disempowering. And when you do what you take your clients through, and then they dream a little, they're thinking about, oh, you know, that Corvette, I can't really afford it, but I'm going to get it. Somehow I'm going to get it. And they always do. They always do. When people really want something, and it's realistic, they step up. Super cool. All right. I am very curious. You have got a lot of experience with this. You obviously care deeply. You're super knowledgeable. What are the common pitfalls that you see, and what's the legal backdrop for helping them through those?
Yeah. Yesterday we touched on them a little bit, but I'll hit some of them again. A big one we see, and again, stereotypically with women, it's not true 100% of the time, but it's stereotypical, wanting to hold on to the house, but having either no path to afford it or trading off a bunch of retirement money to be able to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
And when either one of those two things is done, you're either setting yourself up to lose the house or be in poverty or having no fine. A much higher paying job or a high paying job, and then taking time away from your children, which was the very reason you wanted to stay in the house, is to be able to be with them and be there for them. Or let's say you've been out of the workforce for quite a while and your spouse's earnings have been going up, and most of the retirement is in your spouse's name. So you have nothing but United States Social Security as far as your retirement plan goes. And if you trade the house for that retirement, financially speaking, that might not be a wise move because you're still going to have a mortgage in 20 years and you're going to have no retirement coming in to help pay that mortgage. Also, who knows the state of Social Security, Rich? I don't want to get into a political discussion at all, but if anyone thinks that you can support yourself on pure Social Security with inflation and everything else being the way it is anymore, I don't know what that life is, but it's probably not the one most of your clients and my clients, people watching this seminar, are experiencing right now.
The only people I know pulling that off are living in Ecuador right now.
Okay. And maybe that's the life you want. And if that's the life you want, more power to you. Great. But my guess is it's not the life a lot of people want. That's one. Holding on to the house for emotional reasons and not thinking through all the financial pros and cons and not thinking long term. Another one is, and I alluded to it a little bit earlier too, is just spending boatloads of money fighting over stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Easy for me to say stuff because it's not mine. But I'm talking, people have fought over TVs. They've fought over rugs. They fight over lamps. I actually get appointed by the court and paid to tell someone what we're going to do with the furniture in the house, because they can't agree themselves. And I think, personally, I love making the money. I'm just going to sound like a lawyer for now that you badmouth sometimes, Rich. I love making that money. But it is the dumbest thing I think a family can do to fight over furniture when you're paying me and you're paying your lawyers that kind of money per hour when most of that stuff could be in place for less.
And let me stick up for you a second. I know that 9 times out of 10, you'd rather tell them what to divide than get paid to watch them fight over it for a few weeks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of our lawyers recently, Rich, went to New York to the apartment for the NYU professor, went to Texas for the storage unit, went to Virginia because they also had stuff in storage from when he saw it at MIT, and went to the Raleigh house and literally went room by room and opened a drawer and said, all right, who wants the flatware and who wants the cooking utensils? They paid this woman in my office hundreds of thousands of dollars per the hour to do that. And I just think that's, as they say, pound foolish.
Nice. All right. And so it sounds like the way that you really help is that you help your clients to see that it's not always worth it to fight over everything. And that if they're willing to get out of their emotions and get into their future mind a little, they'll have a clearer vision of what to let go of and how fast.
What to let go of and how fast, and then not let those little slights spill over into you how you handle and navigate the rest of your divorce.
Nice, nice. Hey, Jenny, before we move on to the next segment, how can people find you and who are the right people to look like? I'm pretty sure that if I'm in New York, even though I think you're awesome and we get people in these workshops from all over, unless I'm getting divorced where you are, it's probably not going to help me to call you. So who should find you? How can they find you? What do you have to offer?
So if someone's watching this and this resonates with them, this is part of their philosophy. They're like, yeah, I want to do this. We're Triangle Smart Divorce. We're in the Raleigh, Durham, Cary, North Carolina area. And we generally serve all the counties that surround that area. If you live in North Carolina and you're near the Triangle, you'll know exactly what I mean because the Research Triangle Park is here. But I'll even say if you're not in the Triangle and you need someone in North Carolina, we know like-minded people throughout the state. In fact, we know like-minded people pretty much in every state. Feel free to reach out. Our website is trianglesmartdivorce.com. Our person who does our intake and our referral stuff, I can drop you that email, Rich, if you want to put it in, or I can say it right now, whatever you prefer.
Go ahead and say it, but it's going to be on the screen also.
Okay. So it's jessica.miller@trianglesmartdivorce.com. And that is who will find you a referral if you need one. That's who will hook you up with us if you're in North Carolina and we can help you.
Excellent. Excellent. Anything else you want to share with the audience?
Not with the audience, but with you, Rich. I really appreciate you doing this. I think this is valuable information. I wish a lot of people would watch this seminar before they ever go see a lawyer. Because despite the fact that I like to think everybody thinks like me, I know they don't. And there are some lawyers out there who'd be like, you want to fight about it? Right, we'll fight about it. And I'll make a lot of money and I don't care what happens. And they give us a bad name, but they're there. So you need to take control of your own future and be responsible for your own choices and your own actions. And that's not only choosing your lawyer, but that's choosing what to fight about and what not to fight about. So I appreciate you doing this education.
I love that. I love that because I think divorce feels really out of control for most of us. And what you're basically saying is, hey, we can help you take more control or have more influence or better manage this experience. And that is really the most empowering thing you can do.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rich.